Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to tonight's episode of All About Service Dogs, hosted by yours truly, Doc Vensel. Tonight, we have a really interesting lady, Miss Ann Wicklund, who is an author of three different service dog books, and we are going to talk about one of them, as well as get to know her a little bit. And greet the people and tell us just a little bit about your association and relationship with the service dog industry.
Hello. I started our company when my husband lost his hearing and our dog started working. And so we couldn't find what we needed to take our dog into public, so we started making our own. So we started Mr. Paws by Snow, named after our first service dog, who started working without our knowing what we were even doing. So my customers asked for so much information, it led me to write the first book. They demanded it, and I didn't know how to do that, so they told me they would tell me how. I had several authors who were customers, and so they showed me how to pull it all together. And so my first book was My Ears Have a Wet Nose, and it's about hearing dogs and where to get one, where to take one, how to train one, everything you need to know. The second book then became a children's book. It's a coloring book called I Have a Wet Nose and I Have a Job. And then came the handbook for service dog, because people who were not hearing impaired didn't want to read the first book. But there was still so much information, bad information, that people needed the right answers. So this is the truths and myths about working service dogs.
Well, that is great, and that kind of tells the story and sets the table for us. And that is what I needed. Let's talk a little bit about, you didn't say this, so I need, now you have me concerned that maybe I'm not right. Now, with Mr. Paws, do y'all do any kind of patches or apparel or anything like that?
Oh, yes. We make all of our vests, our patches, raincoats, dog shoes, collars and leashes that say service dog on them. We have a number of products that no one else makes. We have a decal for the car that says service dog on board. We have a sign for the house that says service dog inside. Leash wraps for in training or for veterans. So we make a lot of products that other people don't make. When we saw a need, we just morphed into it, because as my husband's illness overcame other obstacles, it was not just hearing. He now has seizures, so the dog became taking care of his seizures and other, you know, mobility, asthma, a number of other conditions. And so we made a product to help all of them.
Well, that's cool. I read somewhere that your business was built through necessity, and I found that was kind of cute the way that was. Basically, you couldn't find it, and so you built it. Now let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
With hearing alert dogs and things like that, because that's how you had your introduction into service dogs. How did you go about training your dog? And did y'all have any dog training experience beforehand?
Actually, the dog told us. He started to develop certain behaviors that were a little odd. And when we talked to trainers and we talked to other people who knew what was happening, we finally got the picture that he was telling us. He was alerting to sounds. My husband had been a master trainer. We had a security business that we incorporated dogs into, and he went to school in Indiana to the Rudy Drexler School for Dogs and spent a month there learning how to train. So with that behind us, Wayne started training his own dog once he figured out what the dog was trying to say. And so I find it's extremely important for people to listen to their dog. Most of the time, the dog will tell you what the problem is or what you need to be aware of, whether it's a physical condition or a hearing problem. And the same is true probably for the sight dogs, because they're very smart. And it's the humans who have trouble listening or being aware of what the dog's telling them. And then, of course, you need specific training when you need specific things done, such as picking things up off the floor, opening doors, things like of that nature. And everybody needs help with training. So even if you're training yourself, it's a good idea to get a trainer to help you fine-tune what your specific needs are.
Ah, so you've been reading my book. You're just going ahead and answering the questions you know I'm going to ask. And that is okay. I just sit back and let you have it.
Automatic pilot.
Okay, so that is cool. You did indeed lean into the next question about your husband being a master trainer, even found a need and a reason why he would get some help. And some of the tasks that a dog does perform, some are pretty instinctive to the dog, and all you need to do is shape them. Others you need to teach them, and that's cool. Now, what is the breed of your dog? And say real slowly your dog's name, because your dog has a real cute name, the one that you have now. Well, that's probably not the one you have now. It probably was your first one. You might want to give us a history of those dogs as well.
Okay, when we got our first one, he was a white German Shepherd, and he came to us from a litter of 10, sat down at our feet, and didn't leave until we put a collar on him. And so when we started our business, we called it Mr. Paws by Snow, because it was, after all, his doing that made us start this venture. He lived to be 13 years old, and he was an amazing animal, as everyone with a service dog understands. And then when he passed, we went to a kennel from his bloodlines to get another white shepherd. And we went to Reeves Royal Acres in Indiana, if anybody wants a white shepherd. And, of course, I have to warn you, they shed constantly and they blow their coat twice a year. So we're always vacuuming. But this kennel in particular does do a lot of show animals, and they do breed for service work. And I have referred quite a few people to them because they're just amazing, and they chose Snow Shadow for us. The Shadow is now 115 pounds. He's 2 years old, and he just gets better every day as he gets better at his job. And the bond between he and my husband is so strong. And the dog is strong. He pulls him. He sits on him. He does whatever it takes to make my husband obey him. We're not always sure who's in charge, because he will take the leash away from him and say, we're doing it my way.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. It sounds like, now I don't know if this is trained in or if this is shaped in, or if this is just within the dog, the particular breed or the particular dog. But it is common in guide dogs, whether it's a hearing guide dog or a sighted guide dog, guide dog for the blind, that the dogs have to have a way of, I'm losing my thought of what the term is, but they do opposite of what you say when it's important for them to do opposite of what you say.
It's called discretionary disobedience.
That's what it's called. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have just earned your keep. So was this trained or was this a learned behavior that was shaped or what when it comes to your dog?
It's intuitive to the dog. If you get a smart dog, not all dogs are smart, just like not all people are smart. And so it often behooves you to get a trainer to help you choose your dog, whether you're choosing them from a kennel or you're choosing one from a shelter, which is not a bad way to get a dog these days because so many dogs, there's nothing wrong with them, but people can't afford to keep them. They're losing their homes or they're moving into small apartments and they just, you know, it used to be that shelter dogs were really a bad thing, but it's not so bad anymore if you get one that's not damaged emotionally. So the dog can be any size, any breed, as long as he is smart. And you can tell that by certain games you play with a dog, and a trainer can tell right away. So even if you get a trainer that you find online in your locale or PetSmart, any training organization. And that said, if you get a dog from an agency, they all have different parameters. And they all have different policies. So you need to find one that is in sync with what you yourself believe and feel comfortable with. Because just because one agency says one thing and another one says something different doesn't make either one of them right or wrong. It's just the way they choose to do their business.
Okay. So, did your dog come with the discretionary disobedience, or was it?
Oh, yes.
Trained.
That's who he is. He's very strong willed, strong minded. He's very difficult to train. Our last dog was very mellow, and he would do whatever we told him. But he would still protect my husband in ways that we had not anticipated. These dogs just, they do so many things that you are surprised about because they know what you need and they see danger where you don't. Once they understand what you want of them, and you need to tell them what you want.
Okay. Now, I have an obvious question that I have to ask you. I was going to go to something else, but what you just said gives me this question. How do you tell a dog what you want?
Oh, that is a good question. Well, you have conversation. You have conversation. They have ears and they listen and they understand you. They'll understand your body language. And they'll understand your smells because we all have an individual smell. And depending on what's going on with you physically or emotionally, you emit a certain odor. That dog, see, right away, he's here talking. The dog picks up on that and he does what he thinks is best. And he will alert you to what you need to know because he understands what you need to know. It's, I don't know if it's telepathic or if it's biometric. It just is. And I'm told that horses are the same way.
Which is why some miniature horses are the only other animal that they allow as service animals.
True. Plus, they live a long time. Whereas our dogs, you know, are between 10 to 15 years of working time. Maybe that's even pushing it a little.
Yeah, you have to do some special stuff if you're going to get 10 years of working time. But
that's right.
I say do that special stuff so you get that time. But, okay, so I think that by now the listening audience is getting a handle that, hey, this lady has been around service dogs a while. She might not have one for her own, but she lives in a household with one, so maybe we should listen to a little bit of what she's got to say. See, they
actually
told me
the truth is,
go ahead.
The truth is the dog does things for me as well. Even though I'm not the one he works for, he takes care of me when I am diabetic, and if my sugar goes off, he's right there on the spot taking care of me.
Taking care of you as in alerting you to your sugar's low, you need to do something, or taking care of you making sure that if you happen to pass out because you let your sugar get too low, that, you know, he's helping you to come to, or, well,
yes,
let me put
absolutely.
It in the form of a question that I would ask you.
Okay.
You being your husband's caretaker, and I put that in quotes, just so there's no offense, but you being your husband's wife and in the house with the dog, one of my big selling features for my service dogs is this dog in your home is going to change the environment of your whole home. And the dog will be one person service dog, but he might provide services to whatever weakest link there is at the time of the weakest link, because that's what St. Bernards do. Now, in your house, like you said, when you have an issue, the dog will assist you. Tell us about how the dog not only helps your husband, but helps you in the household.
Okay. The dog will herd me to the kitchen if I need to eat. He will bring me food out of his dish and lay it at my feet. He will make me get off my computer when I'm working too long. He will actually nose my hand off the mouse and nudge me so much that I can't possibly sit here and work. I have to get up and move. And he will herd me into where he wants me to go. I have bad arthritis, and some days I can't hardly move, and he will come and lay on me. And he will just be with me and give me comfort. And as you know, when you pet a dog or an animal, you release the hormone oxytocin, which is a calming hormone. It's a physical response to petting an animal that everybody has. And so it's very healing.
Yes, indeed, I do know. And calming and assuring, and this is one of the ways that the dog does, in fact, help the climate of the whole house. And when he brings that calming, healing climate to the house, then the house gets healing, which means the family gets healing, which helps for a lot of the stress that breaks up a lot of families that have a disabled member in it. So that is why that was a good question to ask, and I'm so glad I asked it.
It was very good. He is amazing, and And he helps people who are guests in our home. He helps people when we're walking through an airport. He will go up to someone who looks perfectly fine but may have a hidden disease that is not visible and give comfort to them. While we don't let strangers pet him when he's working, we do allow that because it's good for him and it's good for them.
Well, that is super, super great. Now, it's starting to sound like your dog would be a really, really good therapy dog. And I'll just throw that little firecracker into the conversation and just let it sit there a little bit. I got real tired of patting my own self on the back. You know, I did get a cortisone shot today, but it hadn't kicked in yet, so my arm's still a little sore.
Well, he would be a great therapy dog. You try to discourage people from having their service dog also be a therapy dog because it's often confusing for the dog. They don't know if they can't make nice with everybody since they have to keep their focus to work for the person for whom they are intended to work. You don't want to confuse the dog, and it's very easy for these dogs to get stolen. They're extremely valuable. And that's not a good thing for anybody to be able to pet your dog without permission. And also, sometimes we're in places where there are a great number of people. And for us not to let people pet him is protecting the dog because the stimulation is so great. And people forget that animals are not used to that kind of stimulation. Most animals are at home all day long on their patio or their bed, and they don't get this kind of stimulation, which makes them very scared and frightened, and sometimes they will lash out. So you have to protect your animal as well as let them give comfort, but it's your choice.
So basically you're telling me I have to have some good sense and walk that tightrope, what's good, what's not good, and know my dog like my dog is trained to know me.
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes. And some dogs are more sociable than others, you know.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Some dogs are. Now, I just did what I'm supposed to do, and I looked up at my studio clock, and I said, well, my goodness, if we're going to get this book talked about, we better stop making little small talk and get into this book, because I don't know how much you want to say about this book, so I'm going to give you time to do it how you want to do it. Now, the book title, Handbook for Service Dogs. Now, that has you leaning one way, and you get comfortable with the big title, but the subtitle, Truths and Myths About Working Dogs. Now, that gets me leaning back the other way, and you wrote the book. I read the book. You're a guest on the show. I'm a host on the show, so I get to steer the show a little bit. Let's talk about truths and myths about the working dogs. There was some that you felt were really important to put in your book. I'm just going to hush for a minute, and I'm going to ask you to just talk about some of those, the truth side, the myth side, or the myth side, the truth side. And take a little bit of time and get some folks interested in looking for and finding this book.
Okay. It's available on my two websites, which is www.mrpaws.com or hearingimpaired.net. It's also available on Amazon, eBay, Etsy, anywhere else. Get people interested in it. And it's important because everybody gets told different things. When I do shows or I get a customer that calls me just for information, they want to know certain things. And that went into the book because they've been told one thing by an agency or an organization or a trainer, and it may not be what's really true. It may just be their point of view, their philosophy, or their policy. Some agencies or groups will not place a dog in a home where there is already a dog. We disagree with that. And, of course, everything in my book is subjective because it's my opinion and my husband's opinion. And it makes sense to us. It's not in concrete. It's whatever works for you. Some agencies will not place a dog in a house where there are people under 18, children. We think that's wrong because some of the best work that dogs do is with children, especially autistic children. They're phenomenal. They help children to function in their daily lives in ways that no one can understand unless they've had a service dog, really. So this was important to say, just because someone says so doesn't make it so. And people with handicaps generally believe what they're told, especially if they don't have a lot of other input. So one agency A says this and agency B says the other, and it's very confusing for people. And it can be whatever you want it to be. What's in my book are guidelines. They're ways to say, oh, just because they said so doesn't make it that way, doesn't make it so. And it gives you a little bit more perspective on your autonomy.
I think I might have to bring out my little jar for that big old 25-cent word you just threw out there, that autonomy word. I mean, my goodness, just because you're an author and everything doesn't mean you have to throw out them kind of words on people.
Well, you want to do what's best for you, not because someone else says so.
Because you're an individual.
You have guidelines. Well, you have guidelines that suit you, that help you guide you, help to guide you. But your needs are specific to you. Nobody else.
Correct. And one thing I like how you prefaced all of what you said was one group might say A, another group might say B, and it doesn't mean that either one of them is wrong.
Just different.
And that group's policy. And what you need to do if looking for a group, a program, an agency, what have you, is find one that goes along with you. If in fact you are okay. Now, sometimes we might need an education. And so we can't be like, well, shoot, I'm just going to find somebody that says it the way I want them to say it. Well, that might take a long, long time because the way we want it said might just be incorrect. But I do like how you said and you set up, you know, these are some guidelines that we might need to look at. So, I want to jump into a big, mean, nasty one. I'm going to see what you have to say about this one. One of the big controversies out there today is a dog's diet. And not just a dog, but specifically a service dog, because it's a working dog. It's diet. What you got to say about a dog's diet, Miss Ann?
Well, a dog that doesn't eat healthy isn't healthy, just like people. We never feed our dog from the table. We never give our dog people food because then he won't be able to go into restaurants without begging from the table. And we make sure our dog has a lot of protein, and he also gets grain in a bag of dry food. So Shadow eats his out of house and home. As you can imagine, he eats 4 cans a day and about a 50-pound bag every 2 weeks. We feed him as much as he asks for. This dog is very vocal, and if he's still hungry, he lets us know. He's not a quiet animal. Most dogs, your vet will tell you exactly how much to give him. And if the dog gets overweight, he can't work well and he's not going to feel good. He's going to be sluggish. So you want him to have a good, balanced diet, quality dog food, not the cheapest brand you can find. And your vet will help you with that if you have questions. Now, our dog has a very, he has a tender tummy. So we make sure that his food has pumpkin in it that will help him digest, and also a probiotic for his gut. We try to keep him on the same food all the time because otherwise he'll get sick. And if you're traveling, you don't want that. And that's why PetSmarts are so good, and Petco's, and you know, these clubs, because they all carry the same kind of food so that you can get it anywhere. We always travel with our own food, but just enough to get us by to where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that I got you into that one, and you know, got you in here speaking all this controversial stuff, we may as well keep on with controversial stuff. And it seems to me like you have a bit to say about etiquette.
I think etiquette's very important. A lot of people don't like to look around and see a dog sitting at the table next to them, or in a bus, or wherever you're going to be. They just don't like dogs, and they're expecting the worst behavior because maybe they have a dog that jumps around constantly. So a dog is only welcome if he is behaved well, just like your children. Part of that etiquette is making sure that you carry poop bags and you pick up after your dog and dispose of it properly, and making sure your dog doesn't become a nuisance. He should stay leashed, and he should be by your side or under the table by your leg, and know that he's working. He needs to keep his vest on to let other people know why your dog can be there when theirs can't, and they really, truly appreciate it. Our dog is always welcomed back because he is very well behaved, and that's important. And it also smacks of professionalism and credibility. If your dog acts like a street mongrel, no one's going to believe that you need the help you do, and they won't want you in their establishment or their store if he's sniffing all the food and rubbing up against clothes and things. They won't want you back. And it gives all service dogs a bad name when the people who really need them need a good representation, so that people say, oh, a service dog, well, they're wonderful. And that's what you want.
Because we sometimes are the only ambassador for a service dog that some people will ever see.
That's correct.
Now, let me get you on to this topic. Maybe this would be more agreeable for everybody. as you said, you do a lot of traveling, and you know, you do a lot of speaking engagements and maybe some promoting of your book and promoting of your apparel and stuff. And so you do a lot of traveling, and you've been asked about a lot of traveling. Take a little bit of time and tell us about some traveling issues that we might think about with our service dogs.
Okay. Let's see. If you're traveling in a car for a long distance, you want to be sure, of course, to carry water and poop bags and his food. You want to take frequent stops so that he can relieve himself as often as you do. And we usually have a bed in the back of our car so that he can lay on that, smell his own smells, and be very comfortable, because it gets hard. I mean, it's hard for me to sit in the car for hours, much less a dog, and it's very, you know, they're on a hard surface. When we fly, we let the airlines know in advance that we're coming, and we ask for the bulkhead seat. Of course, our dog is very large. And we put down his blanket in front, and then he backs into the area and lays down and goes to sleep, and he's just fine. We take his vest off when he's laying there, so he'll be more comfortable. But going on and off the plane, he, of course, has his vest on. He's dressed. There is no charge to fly with a service dog. Your service dog can be any size. If you have a very small dog, we do recommend you might want to use a carrier to protect him from getting stepped on. And then you can take him out of the carrier and put him in your lap on the flight. Our dog has taken a cruise. And the first thing everybody wants to know is, where does he go to the bathroom? First thing everybody asks. And the cruise line will have certain papers for you to fill out and an international health certificate you'll need. And they will put together a box, depending on the size of your dog, filled with doggy litter or mulch or some kind of compost. And they'll have it somewhere on the ship that the purser will direct you to. We always get a balcony, so it's often on our balcony, so the dog can go in and out. And then you take him to this potty place at the times when he normally goes at home, and he'll get the idea. He may not like it at first, but, you know, Mother Nature will step in and say, it's now or never, and this is the place. And they'll be fine. Of course, he's really thrilled when he sees dry land. And he goes on buses and tours. He goes everywhere except, well, he hasn't ziplined, but I imagine a small dog could. Let's see, what else? Yes. I think that kind of covers it, no?
Yeah, you did pretty good. Not as good as my show on traveling with a service dog, but it took me three shows. So.
Well, I'll have to catch that sometime and learn from you.
Oh, my goodness. Don't learn from me. My teaching days are over. Okay,
never.
Let's talk about this a little bit. A lot of people, for them, well, actually everybody, for them with a service dog, the issue of price comes up one way or another, and the cost of training. What can you tell, whether it's an owner trainer or somebody who's getting a program trained dog and keeping up the training, or somebody who's doing trainer assisted training, what can you tell some folks to help them out a little bit on the financing of the training of a dog?
I can tell you that the price goes from zero to close to $20,000. There are agencies that provide a scholarship program. There are others that help you raise funds. There are others that just give you a dog that's already trained for you. I mean, it runs the gamut. That's why I say you need to find something that suits you. And, of course, referral is one of the best ways to get what you want, is to find someone with a service dog and say, were you happy, and how did you do that, and where did you get it? PetSmart has a wonderful dog, and often that their trainers can direct you into service work. Of course, first your dog has to be trained to, you know, obey commands and be held that. Those are the basics. And then you can move forward from there. But the price and the parameters are all over the place. So you really need to do your research. If you have your own dog already, see about turning him into a service dog. There's no reason a pet cannot morph, because chances are he's already working for you and you're not paying attention.
Okay. Well, there's some reasons. I mean, you want to have your dog tested to make sure it physically can do what you need him to do.
This is true. And there are evaluators and trainers that do evaluation. There's also an organization online called Association of Pet Dog Trainers that I use quite a bit to find a trainer that trains for certain specifics. And they're very good. And they have a whole list of people that you can find someone located in your area that does what you need. Or they can recommend somebody. You can even just Google it.
Right.
If you want to do your own training.
I am trying to push you into saying something about the tax issues involved with training a service dog. And
tax
for a service dog. Tax, T-A-X.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
All right, let me ask a direct question. Is the cost of training a service dog tax deductible?
Oh, yes, of course it is. It's a medical necessity. It's durable medical equipment. I've been working with some insurance companies trying to get that covered, and with lawmakers. That's my next project, by the way, because service dog laws need to be fixed. They rewrite them all the time, but they don't fix them. And that's why it's so nebulous. It's so difficult to know what the law is, because they're not specific. And, yes, everything you buy for your service dog is tax deductible because it is medical equipment, including the food. Now, the VA will give some vets food for their service dogs. And I know that some agencies, some organizations or stores will give you health care for nothing if you can't afford it. So there are a number of programs out there. You just have to ask for it.
Okay. Now, if I may, I want to read from your book. I could do it from memory, but I want to read from your book since I have you as a guest on my show.
Okay. You're going to hang me with my own words.
Hey, you know, I'm just going to help you out. That's what I do. I help you out. The Internal Revenue Service publication 502 states you can include in medical expenses the cost of buying, training, and maintaining a guide dog or other service animal to assist a visually impaired or hearing disabled person or a person with other physical disabilities. In general, this includes any costs, such as food, grooming, veterinary care, incurred in maintaining the health and vitality of the service animal so that it may perform its duties. And you actually quoted that from publication 502. And
wasn't I smart?
Well, you look pretty smart to quote quote, Bible, if you will, and that helps. But what people need to know is if you itemize, then there's some math that you have to do in order to take your deductions. And so, you know, for me, that's a big point. It's a big deal because, you know, when people get from an organization who's requiring of them something, and even if the organization gives you the dog, you still have to keep up the training of the dog. So there's still going to be costs involved, and there's still going to be costs with the grooming and the vet care and these things. So knowing that part can help save people a lot of money, because a lot of people, I dare say most people who need a service dog, probably are not at the higher end of the social economic scale. And so that helps. And the bit you said about VA, VA does pay for certain things for certain dogs obtained through certain programs. And I'm not going to get into that because I'm not one of those programs. So, you know, let them toot their own horn.
We've had trouble getting through to that. I'm just telling you what I know to be true. I have not experienced that yet myself, but I have customers who have.
Right. And basically, there's some people in pilot programs that are ADI programs that the VA is, they do very well with VA money. I'll just put it like that. But most of us would do better to leave that alone because with great money comes great issues and great problems. And, well, as for me, anyway, I like to keep my organization about the service of what we're doing and about the mission. And, of course, it takes money to run the mission. But sometimes people get into, oh, my goodness, I've got to do X, X, and X to make the money, and lose sight of why they started doing what they were doing to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, off of that there before I get myself in trouble, and I have you here to get you in trouble so I don't have to. So let's say, all right, let's talk a little bit since you're here.
Mm-hmm.
About legal protections. Who do these legal protections reach out to, and what are some of them, and what should I do if I'm challenged in those areas and, you know, people don't give me what I'm supposed to be legally getting?
Legal protections are affordable both for the user of the service dog and the proprietor of an organization, a store, wherever you take your service dog. If your dog is properly identified, and it's true that is not the law that your dog has to wear a vest or have identifying patches, but if you want to avoid a lot of problems, a lot of conflict, it's best that you just go with this program and do it. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time everywhere you go, and it's just not worth the battle. You have enough problems with whatever because of whatever reason you have a service dog. So if your dog is dressed and well-behaved, you're welcome anywhere. That said, not everybody knows that law. In this day and age, you would think that everybody did know it, but they don't. And so you either have to convince them, show them a copy of the law, or tell them to call the police or the attorney general. Your best protection is to call the attorney general and report them. If it's a restaurant or a store or any place. We have been thrown out of, or they've tried to throw us out of hospitals, where they said we couldn't bring the dog in, and I said, just go ahead and watch me and call the police, please. I was charged $250 by a timeshare company because they didn't want that dog there. He was only there overnight, and they knew in advance he was coming. I filed a complaint in the state of Washington, and we got that money back. And I'm sure that timeshare company never did it again. So your remedies are to use your attorney general in that state and file a complaint. And I urge everybody to do this who has a valid complaint. And don't blow it off, because otherwise nothing changes. It doesn't get better. That said, the proprietor of a store or restaurant or a hospital, they also have the right to throw you out, to ask you to leave if your dog is misbehaving. It's just as if your children were misbehaving. You don't have the right to abuse your host just because you have a service dog. I think it's important to know that, to be a good guest, to be welcome, to want everybody to have a high opinion of service dogs, which is important to all of us who have them and need them. Now, my husband also gets allergy shots. He is allowed to take his dog into the allergy clinic, but he doesn't. He can survive for an hour without his dog, and they have asked him to bring the dog in. But for him to do that, they have to completely disinfect the room he's been in because other people are allergic to dogs. Sometimes we go places where someone will say, oh dear, I'm allergic to dogs, and we will move. Because we don't want to encroach on someone else's health issues or fears. There's no need for that. So even though the law says that we can be where we are, doesn't mean we should be. Did I answer your question?
Very well stated. I do like and appreciate you taking the approach that you just took. Because so many service dog handlers, a lot of which are self-trained and owner-trained handlers, are so militant about their rights.
That's true.
That they forget about being kind to other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the way you just stated how you stated, I just love the way you put that, because yes, we do have rights, but sometimes it's okay to say, you know what, I'm going to put this other person ahead of me because it's not costing me anything to put this other person ahead of me. So let's do that. And I thank you for saying it the way you said it.
Thank you. It's fair. It's what's fair.
Now, we're running a little short on time, shorter than I knew. So, at this point, what I want to do is I want to give you an opportunity to speak your mind a little bit, talk about things that we might not have talked about that's on your heart, on your mind, that you'd like to put out there to the service dog community. Because, you know, the whole community listens to my show.
I know they do.
You know, you just go ahead and take a few minutes or what have you and just talk to the people as if they were in one of your talks and they were in your audience. Just talk to them.
Okay, let's see. I think that my next project will be, I have worked with airports and construction people on relief areas in airports. In fact, they're starting to include them within the secure areas, which is a wonderful thing. Some are good ones and some are bad ones, but we're getting there. We're making progress. And my next project will be also to work on laws, because while we have service dog laws and federal ones, the states are throwing in odd laws every once in a while, which I get calls from my customers in a panic saying, oh my God, Florida just passed this state law. What does that mean for me? And I just calm down. Federal law applies. You're not affected, no matter what the state thinks. Federal law applies. Still, the federal law is not a good one. It is so wishy-washy that it doesn't specify the things that people need to know. And there's still an awful lot of people who don't understand service dogs. And unless they're friends with someone who has one or sees one in action, they will never understand it to the degree that we understand what the dog does for you. People will come up to us and say, well, he looks fine. What does he do? Well, you don't have to tell him. You don't have to tell him he's emotional support. We make our emotional support dogs medical service dogs because chances are you have medical issues if you have an emotional issue. It's just really important to make people understand that this is a medical necessity, not a fling, not something you'd like to have, because having a service dog is hard work. Not only do you take care of yourself, you take care of the dog, and then you have to take care of all their stuff. You have to make sure you've got food and water and transportation and, you know, so many things that go along with it, and medical care and grooming. Which brings up a little bit of a point that when you choose your dog, make sure that his grooming needs are consistent with your abilities. Some dogs don't require grooming. Some require a great deal of grooming. And, of course, your pocketbook reflects that as well. And that's, I don't think I have a lot more to say about that, unless you have another question.
Well, I can have questions all night long. Asking questions is what I do. But, I do certainly appreciate, you know, your openness. And, I do have one other question that I kind of have to ask, because you mentioned several different organizations and names. Now, I want to give you opportunity to say, are you sponsored by any of the organizations or businesses that you talked about?
I absolutely am not. I refer and recommend certain organizations that I'm familiar with because I like the way they operate. We share the same philosophy, and they do good work. But no, nobody pays me, and nobody says thanks for the attaboy. I just, you know, do what I think is right. Find someone else that can help us. Then I refer to them because I learn from them. And there's so many. Some people seem to think that there's a limited amount of service dog agencies or organizations, but there aren't. People are always telling me about this one or that one in different states, but there are in every single state in the union. So take your time to find what you need. And make sure that they agree in principle with what you believe.
Indeed, indeed. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that I believe if a program, organization, or agency is worth their weight in salt, they're going to be as interested that you fit their idea as you should be about them fitting yours, because there's different strokes for different folks, and you know there is a marriage that you need to have, and if you don't get in a hurry, you could find what you need. Now, a lot of folks, you know, there are, have the waiting list and whatnot, but you can find what you need if you look for it in a methodical way and don't settle. Because like you said, you don't have to.
That's right. And that I would be very careful about reviews and referrals. Because there are people and organizations out there that have really good reputations that are not deserved. So just watch. And I do want to give a plug, if I have a minute left, to a new organization.
If it's about mine. Oh, it's not about mine?
Yours
okay,
goes
go
with,
ahead.
Of course yours. But this is a new pet museum. It's a pet museum that's going in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't know the specifics of it yet, but I'll certainly be blogging about it or posting about it. And I'm meeting with someone about it next week. So that should be very interesting coming up.
Okay. Well, I don't know what a pet museum has to do with service dogs since our dogs aren't pets.
It's going to have a big service dog presence.
Oh, well, okay then.
Yes. Yeah.
And real slowly, because at the top of the show you went over this really quick-like, but I do believe that some people would like to at least take a look at some of your books. So one by one, give the title of the book and, you know, who it might be good for. Then after you've done all three books, then go ahead and give your website information again and where they can get it.
Okay. This is a wet nose series. And the first book was My Ears Have a Wet Nose. Acquiring, Loving, and Training a Hearing Dog. And it's for mostly for people who have hearing problems to train their dog. And it will also give the same information, where to get one, how to look for one, how to, you know, etiquette, all of that. And then the next one is a coloring book for children or their parents about service dogs. And it says, I have a wet nose and I have a job. And it's gotten great reviews. And people buy them all the time. I mean, lots and lots of them, because it's just a great thing for schools, for hospitals, for doctor's offices, for grandparents to give their grandchildren. And the new one, of course, is Handbook for Service Dogs. It's your Bible, Truths and Myths. And my website is MrPaws.com or hearingimpaired.net. And that's where you find them.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I want to say just because I like you just a little bit, I don't want you to get carried away. But I actually was referred to your book, I Have a Wet Nose and I Have a Job, and when I was ordering some of my Canine Good Citizen books for my classes. And
really?
Yeah, that one was, you know, they were like, people who bought this, maybe it was the puppy class, I'm not sure, but people who bought this also bought. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, I know her. She's going to be on my show. So,
well, thank you for telling me that.
You're getting a little bit of press out there, and people are, you know, saying good things about the book, and, you know, what you said about that is absolutely true. And if you don't mind, tell Wayne I said thank you for letting you have this hour with us. We bled over into a second hour, but we're not going to keep you long because I certainly appreciate it. Tell the white snowy dog that he can have you back and you're not working too long because now you're done. And I want to thank
Ann
for being on the show. You can go ahead and thank me
back.
Go ahead.
Thank you for having me. And Shad will be back, glad that I'm going back to be with the pack because he gets very nervous when I'm missing.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to let you go back as I thank you. And normally we would take calls, but I don't have anybody lighting up my board, probably because I didn't give the phone number out. Or if I did, maybe I gave the wrong area code.
Yeah.
It's okay. Hey, did I disclose all your mistakes? No, I didn't. So you just hush, lady.
I didn't say a thing. I know nothing.
Yeah, there you go. Give me a little protection here. Okay.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Well, we'll have to do it again with your next project, and I know you have much more to say. You didn't say it all, but you gave us enough. And
good.
I want to thank my listeners for listening in. Thank you for telling your friends, and come back tomorrow where we'll have another exciting show. Matter of fact, all this week we'll have good and exciting shows. So Monday through Friday, same time, same station, we'll be here. You be there. You take care of yourself. Love your people. Love your dog as your dog loves you. And we'll see you on tomorrow. Goodbye.